Yesterday, CROG described how we need to catch the object when it happens in order to see the true nature of physical phenomena and mental phenomena that are really there. This is what the Buddha taught. And if we do, if we observe right when the object when something happens physically or mentally, we will come to see its characteristics in stages. There's a series of characteristics that can be seen. So the individual characteristic becomes apparent, and this whatever arises, it has a beginning, it arises, it has a middle and an end. These three moments that every physical and mental phenomenon has become apparent naturally when we try to observe the object at the moment it happens. So the object arises, something arises, it matures, and it disappears. Especially when one comes to see the dissolution, how the object comes to an end, one knows that this body is not permanent. And something that does not last, that is not permanent, is not satisfying. It's inherently unsatisfying. And there is no self involved in anything that is experienced, no self in there that can make us happy. So when we know the common characteristics, these three, the fact that things arise and then pass away, they're not permanent, that they are unsatisfactory because of that, and because they occur of their own accord without a self. If we know these common characteristics, then vipassana jnana, vipassana knowledge, it hasn't begun right at the start of practice. But someone with good intelligence who works carefully, respectfully, making serious effort, can come to see these within a week. One should have strong desire to get the benefits that the practice brings. And for us to have strong desire, faith is very important. Only when we have faith and confidence in the practice, then there will be the desire to do the practice, and our practice will be effective. No matter how long one practices, if there's not belief in the qualities of satipatthana, if one doesn't trust in the practice, then one won't have the desire to get the benefits, and one's effort won't be strong enough. So our practice won't ever be effective, even if we practice a long time. So one needs to examine oneself. Do I believe in the practice of satipatthana? Do I know how beneficial do I think it can be? How good is this going to be for me? Do I believe that it is possible to get the benefits that I've heard about? So one has to examine oneself. If one knows about the qualities of the satipatthana practice, then one will have faith in it, and one will have the desire to get the results that can come. And thus one will put in the needed effort to gain results in the practice. So this is something Seroji would like to caution the yogis about. The Buddha described five qualities that one needs to possess when one is meditating in order to see true sabhava. The first is faith and confidence. One has to have trust. The second is good health. The third is honesty. The fourth is ardent effort. And the fifth is that one needs to see clearly the arising and the passing away of mental and physical phenomena, nama and rupa. If one possesses these five qualities, one will gain special dhamma in this lifetime. When we say that it's necessary to have faith, for faith to arise, there has to be something that is trustworthy. There has to be something that is worthy of our faith. Something that when we hear about it, when we learn about it, we say to ourselves, this is true. In the texts, the Buddha has 9 special qualities, or 10 special qualities, and one should have faith. One should understand and have faith in these. Among the many qualities of the Buddha, if one understands just one and has faith in that, then it's enough. So this quality is arahang. This means that the Buddha was free of the mental defilements of lobha, dosa, and moha, greed, hatred, and delusion, that are the source of all our suffering. The Buddha was completely pure because he was free of these mental defilements, including personal tendencies known as vasana. He became free of these because he practiced the practice of satipatthana himself. And at the end of his practice, he realized arahantship, arahant path knowledge, which eliminated all the kilesas completely. This is the meaning of the word arahang. Because the Buddha eliminated all the kilesas completely, no matter how attractive something was, no greed arose in his mind. No matter how despicable, how hateful something was, no dosa, no anger would arise in his mind. And the Buddha knew clearly everything that there is to be known. There wasn't anything that he couldn't know that was unknown to him. Everything was clear. This is also the meaning of arahang. In the world, when someone is honest and free of greed, anger, and delusion, people say, this person is exceptional. It's exceptional. This person stands out. And the Buddha had nothing dishonest about him. He had nothing to hide because he didn't do anything wrong. He had nothing that he had to pretend about. And he never boasted in order to make people believe him or to make people think well of him. There were no qualities like this at all. The Buddha was completely clean. Knowing this quality, we can feel trust in the Dhamma that the Buddha preached and practiced himself. If one doesn't trust in the Buddha, it won't be easy to trust the Dhamma that he taught either. The Buddha is an object that is worthy of our trust. So is the Dhamma which he taught. If we practice the Dhamma taught by the Buddha, we will come to know things progressively. We will come to know what he talked about. So this is not something we should have doubt about. And the Buddha didn't teach the Dhamma. He didn't gain the Dhamma just for himself. He didn't keep it to to himself. He wanted others to gain purity too. So he taught the Dhamma, try and see. The Buddha guaranteed that the results of the practice are consistent with the practice. And the practice that he taught is not just something that he heard from somebody else but didn't know about. The Dhamma taught by the Buddha is systematic. So people sometimes don't have faith in an individual, but if one trusts the Dhamma, then indirectly one is trusting the Buddha. If one practices, one will come to see the truth of what the Buddha taught. And one who sees the Dhamma sees the Buddha. The Buddha lived in India more than 2,500 years ago, and he preached the Dhamma. If we practice the Dhamma that he taught so long ago, we will come to see that what he taught is correct. If one makes effort in the practice, one will come to see in a matter of days the truth of what the Buddha taught. In this way, our faith can reach a stage where it is firm. So what Tseroji would like to talk about today is the four kinds of faith. So let's assume that one has faith. And perhaps one doesn't have faith in individuals, but one trusts the Dhamma. So that quality, we can assume that that quality is present in all the yogis. One has faith in one of these two things, the Buddha or the Dhamma. So that quality is, the first quality is fulfilled. And the second quality that we should have is that of having good health. What does that mean? These days, there isn't anyone who's really healthy. So what good health means is healthy enough to digest the food that we eat. What's the second one? Okay. So the yogis all have this quality. And the third quality is honesty. This quality is very important. There shouldn't be any maya or teya. These are two Pali words. Maya means that one has done something wrong, but one pretends that one hasn't. There are things that we shouldn't do in the world, and we have to have the courage to avoid doing these things. We need to have the courage to avoid what shouldn't be done. And if we do something wrong, perhaps, that sometimes happens, in that case, we should be brave enough to admit our wrong in the presence of the appropriate person. That may be the person wronged, for example. So in the world these days, people are very weak in this aspect of not admitting their faults. And teya means that we pretending to have qualities that one doesn't really have, trying to impress people and so on. So these days, people aren't like that. They're very weak in this respect, and they pretend to be blameless when they aren't really. And they pretend to have qualities that they don't have because they want others to look up to them. So the honesty that we need to have has these two parts. We need to be honest about the faults that we do have and honest about the qualities that we do not have. This factor of honesty is not only needed in the Dhamma. It's needed in the whole world. So it goes without saying that it's needed when we practice. And Sayadawji will explain about this, but first of all, he would like to explain the remaining two factors that a yogi should possess. The fourth factor is that one has to make serious effort. One shouldn't have any consideration for one's life or limb. If one thinks, I might get sick. Well, no one has gotten sick from the practice. In fact, some people have gotten well, have been cured through the practice. Or one might think, I might die. Well, no one has died doing in the practice. So don't be afraid. Be brave. You need to be brave. And we need to have courage in order to make the effort to observe the rising and falling. So the effort that we need to make, first of all, we start by trying to note every single rising and falling of the abdomen. And we start by doing that, and then when we can do it somewhat, laziness comes in. So we need to make effort then, further effort, increased effort, to overcome the laziness. And then once we do, we continue to make effort, and our effort reaches a stage where it is progressive. It goes up. It doesn't go back. It doesn't fall down. It keeps on going up until we reach the goal. So when one practices like that, making successive effort in the practice, one will come to know the fast arising and passing away of mental and physical phenomena. So if one practices so that one comes to see, first of all, the discernment of nama and rupa, mental and physical phenomena, continuing through stages until one sees the fast arising, momentary arising and passing away of mental and physical phenomena, that person is sure to gain the Dhamma in this very lifetime. And the reason why is that the five factors that Sayadawji has just mentioned are fulfilled. Yesterday, Sayadawji started to explain in brief what the method is of practice. He said that just now, only if we note at the moment of arising will we see sabhava, true nature for sure. So in this phrase, only if we note or observe at the moment of arising, this word arising means whatever arises, whatever appears, at the moment of seeing, at the moment of hearing. So only if we observe at the moment of seeing will we see sabhava. Only if we observe at the moment of hearing or smelling or tasting, touching, thinking will we see the sabhava, the true nature that is there at that moment. The words at the moment of, at the moment means the present moment. When the object is, when the phenomena is happening, when it's fresh, when it's hot. So we can't observe something that is already gone. It's past, it's gone. So we can't observe the future either because it hasn't happened yet. We need to observe what is right there in the present moment. So we put the attention on the abdomen, the rising occurs, and there's some quality like stiffness or tension, vibration. This nature is evident. This nature, true nature, can be seen. And Sayadawji said also, only if we note or observe at the moment of arising. So this word, to observe. To observe means that we have to apply effort to reach the object. That means being alert and not sluggish, but also not hasty. We have to aim accurately too. This is what is necessary for observation. The energy applied, virya, dispels the despicable kilesas, starting with laziness. And aim, accurate aim, makes the mind blossom. Without aim, the mind will be shrunken and sluggish. So the first thing that one has to overcome is this shrunken and lazy mind. And to do this, we use energy, mental energy, virya, which is the Dhamma that can get the better of laziness. And we use its opposing factor, which is accurate aim. And these two together are what is meant by observation of the object. When we have these two factors, then sati, mindfulness, will arise. And following that, collectedness of mind. So our job is just to catch the object when it's fresh, with energy and aim precise. We have to just try with effort and accurate aiming to observe what is happening right at the very moment. And this is our only job here as yogis. We don't have any other responsibility. And here, there is no need to think about anything. Thinking is a hindrance to the practice. On the outside, when we're in the world, we have to think. But here, we have no need for thinking at all. So the most important thing that we can do is, one, apply energy to observe the object, and two, try to make our aim accurate. We need to try to aim and note. And we have to tell the teacher, can we note or not? We're trying to observe the rising and falling of the abdomen. Are we able to observe it with effort and aiming or not? So one has to explain to the teacher how one works when one goes to the interview. Can steadfastly, concurrently, carefully, effectively, can one note or not? We have to say, are we able to note the object or not? And this, being able to say openly to the teacher in the interviews, depends on the yogi's honesty. If one doesn't admit when one is unable to note, that amounts to maya, or trying to hide one's fault. And if one says one can note when one can't really, that amounts to teya, or pretending to be able to do something that one can't really. So one has to be very open and frank. Can you note the rising and the falling? Can you observe the rising and the falling when they happen with effort and aim? If you can, what do you know? Is it the shape of the belly that is apparent in your mind? Is it the position of the abdomen, the way it rises, expands, and collapses? Or is some quality evident of hotness or cold, stiffness, tension, and so on? One will see one of these three. If one looks at something, one will see it in one of these three ways. So we need to be able to say how we're seeing something. If we can't note, that means that the mind is somewhere else. It's wandered. Did you note the mind that wandered? And if you noted it, what happened? If pain arises, is there pain? Did you note it? If the mind is not somewhere else, it may be because pain has arisen. So did you note the pain? If you noted it, what happened? Did it increase? Did it decrease? Did it stay the same? Did it disappear completely? We should be able to say what happens to the objects that we observe. And we should be able to say that we are not able to note, if that's the case. This is what is needed on our side. So please understand that this third factor of honesty is very important for yogis. When sitting, starting with the rising and the falling, observing whatever arises with respect and care, in walking, every step, or every lifting and placing, or every lifting, moving, and placing, can we observe these? If we can observe the lifting, what do we know? Do we know the shape of the leg? Do we know how it's lifting up? Or do we know the quality of becoming light, or another quality? When the foot moves forward, do we know the shape of the foot, its motion forward, or do we know something such as pushing or pulling? We have to work respectfully and report openly. When the placing of the foot occurs, what is known? Is it the form of the foot? The fact that it's the placing or gradually becoming heavy and going down? Are we able to note every lifting, moving, and placing or not? In walking, coming to the end of the path and standing, that's something we have to observe also. And turning, these are the fundamental things that one has to observe in walking, lifting, moving, placing, or left step, right step, lifting, placing, standing, turning. And outside of sitting and walking, there's everything else that we do, our general actions. We also have to observe those carefully. So there are really just three things that we have to put our attention on. In sitting, the rising and the falling and other objects. In walking, lifting, moving, placing, standing, turning. And in general activities, whatever other activities we're doing. Just three parts to our day. So if one works with care, respect, and continuity, one will be able to gain special Dhamma in a short time. Sayadawji urges that everyone, understanding the benefit of this work that we're engaged in, make serious effort, cherishing the practice, respecting the practice, working carefully and continuously, applying oneself in the time that we have. That's all for today. Sadhu, sadhu.